What is food security? Is food security something that everyone should be worrying about? Or is food security an issue only government needs to worry? In 2020, and in light of this COVID situation, personally, I think food security is everyone's business. The food security, as defined by the United Nations Committee on World Food Security, it means that all people at all times have physical, social, and economic access to sufficient, safe, and nutrition foods that meets their food preference and dietary needs for an active and healthy life. I know it's a lot of process, but this podcast is all about the growing, the making, the keeping, the storing, distribution, everything about food, but not just about the taste. Hi, my name is Ip, and welcome to the Functional Food Podcast. In today's show, we have Ahmad Khan. So Ahmad Khan, he is a cellular agriculture consultant and founder and editor of Cell Agri. So if you'd like to visit the page, it's cell.ag. That is cell.ag. So Cell Agri is a news and research startup that aims to be the homepage of the emerging field of cellular agriculture, providing the latest updates and insights on a range of topics and trends related to cellular agriculture. They also tracks all the major and upcoming players in this field while providing them the ability to post and share the latest news and opportunities. Ahmad is also a co-founder and member of the board of directors of Cellular Agriculture Canada, which is a non-profit organization in advancing and promoting a cell agriculture industry in Canada. Amongst many things, Ahmad is also a speaker, and he speaks about the cellular agriculture. So he has been speaking in Canada, England, Singapore, and the US. So without further ado, let's continue to this show, and I'm pretty sure you'll love it. But do stick around to the end, where we have a little announcement on an upcoming Odd Protein conference, and details of that will be at the end. Hey Ahmad, how's it going?
Hi, yeah. Thank you for having me.
Listeners of this podcast, so far we have been graced with quite a few, you know, really industry-moving players in the field, and today we have Ahmad. And Ahmad, I just want to ask you, back when you first, you know, started diving into this whole subject, like, did you had a good understanding on what is cellular agriculture? Like, did it come very naturally to you that, oh, this is something that, you know, maybe people would want to, would need to dive into the future? Like, and what I mean by the past is only a few years back, you know, like, it's not even a decade back. Yeah, so how do you feel the first time when you see this whole, this concept?
Sure thing, yeah. I first learned about cellular agriculture a few years ago at the end of university, and I was blown away by the whole concept of cell agriculture. I have a background in cell biology, and I was blown away by all the opportunities this field has to address so many global problems all at once. So with that mindset, I was ready to jump into the cellular agriculture ecosystem and learn as much as I possibly could and get involved as soon as possible. But at the time, actually, I was having a problem. It was hard to find out what the latest news and information was out there about the cellular agriculture field, what the latest news was, who the companies were, and what opportunities there were even to jump in and join. Mm-hmm. And that's how Cell Agri began, to be the news and market insights platform focusing on the future of food with cell agriculture.
When you first saw this whole cellular agriculture, like, was the product like meat-like? Was it more of a solution, you know, like a liquid form? Like, is it tangible at that time?
Great question. So the picture that blew me away was the Memphis Meats cell-cultured meatball. Mm-hmm. And their cell-cultured poultry, including duck and chicken. The concept that we could grow meat directly from cell cultures blew me away, and I wanted to dive in right away. I do also want to address that meat is not the only application of cellular agriculture into our food ecosystem. There are so many more applications that we can go beyond just meat. There are lots of companies that are looking at using cells to grow other animal product ingredients, most notably a company like Perfect Day that is using their animal-free dairy proteins as ingredients in products like ice cream, for example. So there's so many different ways we could apply cell agriculture into our food systems.
So for my personal background, I've done plant science research, and I've seen my colleagues use cell type to kind of reproduce a plant. Is it the same for the meat industry, for the meat cellular agriculture? Like, do you grow a piece of meat, you know, like a cutting of a meat, or how does it work?
Hey, that's a great question. When it comes to cell-based meat, to put it simply, scientists just take a small biopsy sample from the animal of interest, whether that's a cow or a chicken or even seafood, for example, mm-hmm. and grow those cells directly. And some of those cells ideally would contain stem cells that have the ability to self-replicate and divide indefinitely into more cells that can become products like meat, for example. And these stem cells are then grown in a cell culture growth medium that helps those cells develop into becoming the type of cells you'd find in meat, like they would normally do in an animal. And ideally at scale for some of these cellular agriculture companies, the cells and the cell culture nutrient would all be placed into a bioreactor where these cells then grow and mature into animal products like meat, while in the cell culture growth medium in these bioreactors.
The photo in your book, there's Dr. Mark Poles and the first cell cultured meat beef burger, and it's like minced meat in a petri dish. Like, is that the final product of cellular agriculture? Like, like it is meat, right? In that sense.
So that's a really exciting picture, because that was the first ever cell cultured beef burger that was made back in 2013. That photo was actually taken from Dr. Mark Post for his cell cultured beef burger showcase in London in 2013. Was the first time the world saw what a cell-cultured meat could look like. But interestingly, that first cell-cultured beef burger only contained muscle cells. And the people who reviewed and tasted the burger said it tasted almost like beef, because it's not very intuitive, at least to me initially, but a lot of the flavor that we find in meat doesn't just come from the muscle.
Yep.
It comes from the fat tissue as well.
Yes.
So you get the all-encompassing cell-cultured burger, we need to make a product that has both the muscle and the animal fat as well.
Yeah, like I quite like Impossible, you know, the plant-based patty, but it is only so good if you don't compare with gourmet burgers. Like you can immediately taste the difference, you know, between real meat and plant-based. Once you bring up the price point of the meat itself, like, it's okay if you compare to, let's say, McDonald's, you know, or any other fast food joint. Like, you can't really tell the difference, but you bring up to a $20 burger category, it's suddenly like, oh, there's a lot of things that's missing from the plant-based. So for now, you'll be attending a virtual conference that will talk about scaling up this whole industry, right? And have you seen anyone that's ready to kind of, you know, start selling, or is there already cell-based meat on the market at the moment?
Yeah, that's a great question. So right now we have a lot of incredible cell-based meat companies all around the world that are working on producing sustainable meat through cells. One of the issues some of these companies are having right now in terms of a challenge for the field to move forward is scaling production. We have all these companies that have shown prototypes and have showcased them to prove that they have the technology to make sustainable animal products like meat. But we now need to explore how to get to the next level in meat production. That's why scaling is going to be such an interesting question for the field to move forward. How can we produce the exact same products we've made at small scale, bench lab scale, all the way to commercial scale, and become a more sustainable and viable food solution? Well, what's actually interesting there as well is we're seeing a lot more companies emerge that are looking to address some of these scaling challenges for the field and provide those as services to other established companies in the cellular agriculture food ecosystem to help them move to the next scaling level and be able to enter market one day.
Like, you know, like, have you been into a slaughterhouse, you know, or abattoir?
I have not personally, no.
So, I mean, there was one chicken slaughterhouse near where I was working, and it smells really bad. Like, would cell agriculture meat come to the point where there will be, it will be a very clean kind of industry rather than the current with all the smell and all the blood.
That's a really interesting point you raised there.
Yep.
So beyond some of the traditional and normally spoken about benefits of the field, from the environmental benefits to public health and animal welfare, an interesting aspect of cell-cultured meat and overall cell agriculture products is the concept of traceability. Because we're producing these in facilities that you know where the product is directly coming from, you can exactly show which facility the product came from. And because it's all going to be produced in ideally sterile bioreactor environments, it'll be easy for consumers to come visit these facilities as well and see where their meat, see where the animal products are actually coming from directly. It's a whole new level of traceability and transparency in our food supply chain that we haven't seen for a while in our animal food supply chain, being able to directly visit these facilities and see where our food is coming from.
Yeah, I'm trying to just, you know, wrap my head around how the production facility might look like, and I see pictures of bioreactors. You know, they kind of look like a beer brewery. Is that the future?
It's a key question the field's still exploring right now, actually. So bioreactors, I think, like I mentioned, are going to be essentially the large chamber for all these aspects of food production come together. You have the cells in there, you'll have the cell culture medium formulation. You may even have scaffolding to help provide more structural support for these cells to become more complex meat products. You have all these different aspects come together in these bioreactors. The field needs to still explore how these bioreactors would look like at scale to make sure that, one, the cells can properly grow in them, and two, they can produce enough product at scale that is viable for all these companies to produce products that are affordable for the everyday consumer. So we need to explore how these bioreactors would look at scale, but many people are imagining they may look like large, vast, like beer breweries.
So it'd be quite a nice environment to work in compared to, you know, today's the freezer environment.
Yeah, absolutely. So again, that helps, it brings up this idea of if people can just walk through these food facilities and seeing these large bioreactors and seeing, oh hey, this is where my meat's coming from, and looking to the left, oh hey, this is where potentially my dairy products are coming from, it helps raise a whole new level of transparency and traceability in our food supply chain. You could also argue it helps bring in accountability as well, because if you have one of those large facilities in your neighborhood, you know that's where your food's coming from. So it's easy to source where the food is, and it helps bring a whole new area of traceability that we haven't seen before.
Yeah, like, you know, all the chefs is always talking about eat local, you know, farm to table. Like, this literally can achieve that without, you know, having to take away more land for animal rearing and agriculture. Like, you don't need a very different building, you know, like you can just slot it right into the kitchen as well. I mean, if the tech goes when the tech goes mature enough, like I would imagine it would be like a microwave or a fridge, you know, where you press some button and it spits out the meat of choice. At this moment, right, I understand the complexity of trying to make the meat itself. Like it's very easy to get a steak from an animal. You just cut it out. And whereas for cellular egg, it's very difficult to create that steak image, right?
Absolutely. So the steak is one of those products that the field's working to be able to develop one day. It's such a complex meat product in terms of you have animal muscle cells, you have animal fat cells, and you also have connective tissue, all aligned in a unique manner that helps give steaks its great taste, right? So once the field is able to get to the point where we can make cell-grown steaks affordable and just as tasty as conventional steaks, I think that'll be a major milestone for the field. Interestingly, there is one company called Aleph Farms that back in December 2018, they showcased their first samples of a cell-based steak. It was a small piece, but it just shows the incredible technological breakthroughs they're achieving to work towards that goal, the ultimate goal, the cell-based steak.
Yeah, like I see in like a lot of TV shows, like the American steak portion is, you know, it's ginormous, like 64 ounces. Like I yeah, like if they can, you know, print it out or, you know, however they do it, like I think it would be such an amazing, because I would think like steak is actually quite a unsustainable cuisine. You know, you are only eating one small part of the animal, and you know the cow is such a huge beast.
That's a really good point. The steak is one of the more valuable cuts from a cow, no doubt. And it highlights that if this field is able to address that and be able to produce great cell-based steaks, the field can compete with that part of the meat market as well.
So right now the meat industry is $2.7 trillion worth, right? And they're saying that the cell agriculture, the cell-based meat is going to be $20 billion in the next few years. Like, so far you have seen, you know, you have like your years in this industry, like is there anyone close to be a commercial rollout?
That's a really interesting question. So a lot of the companies in the cellular agriculture meat space have shared that they're looking to get to market within the next few years. A few companies have plans to ship products in 2021 even, but I think in the bigger picture it's more important that products come to market correctly as opposed to quickly for the bigger picture of the field. And what I mean by that is both the food safety aspects of it and public perceptions and consumer perceptions of the field. We have to make sure that these products don't necessarily rush to market, that all these companies are in clear communications with both government agencies and food safety groups to make sure that these products are going to be safe for the public in terms of making all the regulatory requirements. And then there's the whole consumer perception side of it as well. When it comes to novel food technologies like cell agriculture, communication is going to be key. We need to ensure that these companies do a clear job in communicating not just how these products are made and how the facilities would look like, but why. Why are companies and scientists all around the world looking to produce food from cells directly? It's important for companies to share the overall picture of making a sustainable food system and how our current animal agriculture system cannot meet the demand of the future, and we need all options on deck to make sure we can feed our future populations. This whole narrative about why companies are working on these products is going to be important to make sure we have a sustainable food system where this field is accepted as well.
All right, so for yourself in Canada, like obviously there's no translation issue, but do you think translation will be a big problem for this industry as a whole?
Do you mean in terms of translation and communication?
Yes, like the very fundamental words of cellular agriculture itself, like cell-based meat. Like it's pretty easy to understand in English, but if you were to, you know, translate to Mandarin, French, like would they carry the same meaning?
This is why we need people all around the world working in this whole cellular agriculture food ecosystem to help highlight all the different terms that people can use around the world in their own languages to address not just the word cell agriculture, but how to translate something like cell-cultured meat or cell-based meat to their own languages. We have parts of the world where terms like cell-based meat or even cultivated meat won't translate well to highlight what the product is in terms of it's a sustainable and more environmentally friendly way of producing meat from cell. Maybe there may be more suitable terms that can be done, that can be discussed locally all around the world in their own local language to help make sure that the communications and the perceptions of the field or concerns of the field are truly addressed all over.
So Tyson Foods, they are quite a big player in investing in this sort of future tech. Do you think that they are investing it because it is the way forward, or simply because they cannot produce enough to meet demands?
Absolutely. So Tyson Foods has been one of the major meat companies that has invested in the cellular agriculture meat ecosystem. They have invested in both Memphis Meats in the US as well as Future Meat Technologies in Israel. The way these investments highlight is how meat production may change in the future, and how we need more options and all opportunities to meet the meat demand of the future. So I think it's a really positive sign that we see companies like Tyson investing in the field. It highlights that they're looking towards the future and developing a strategy where they can produce meat in all possible ways, through animals as well as through cells. and even to plant-based options as well.
With all this, you know, big money coming in, right? Like, when do you think? Because I don't really see much of government trying to put policies to encourage this sort of stuff. Like, you know, generally they encourage startups, but they haven't started to, you know, kind of dive into the whole policy issue of what is meat, you know, at this point. Like, do you think that this is a conversation that should be happening more often?
I agree with that. Regulation is going to be a huge question for this field to move forward all over the world. Companies in the US, for example, are already starting discussions with the US regulatory agencies to engage how this field will be regulated and how this field can move forward. You need a regulatory group that helps move the field forward and helps wants to engage with the players to figure out what's the best way to help these companies, to help ensure that it's safe at the same time for proper food system in the future, right?
Mm-hmm.
We need companies to be open and communicate clearly with these agencies to help them and the government understand why what they're doing is important and why it matters for not just the companies, but of course for those countries and the government agencies as well, for food security and other aspects of food production. This is like Singapore actually have been engaging with companies around the world and trying to create a sustainable food system for local food production.
This podcast is focusing more on food security. So in this sense, cellular-based meat is actually, I think, probably is going to be one of the main component in future food security policies, but it's not happening yet. But do you think that for the raw materials of this technology, right? Like, can we buy the raw materials and store it up in some freezer somewhere and only, you know, activate it when we need it? Like, does it work this way?
So food security is a very interesting perspective when it comes to cell agriculture.
Mm-hmm.
Food security has been a talking point when it comes to cell agriculture in the US and Canada until very recently with the COVID-19 pandemic. But food security is actually the major reason why there is an explosion of interest for cell agriculture in Asia, particularly in Singapore, Japan, and the Middle East. So without requiring as many resources for food production, especially conventional animal agriculture, these countries that usually rely heavily on food imports can now produce enough food locally for their populations. So in that way, the COVID-19 pandemic has really highlighted the need for resilience in our food supply chains to ensure people don't lack access and availability to their food needs. And cell agriculture can definitely help address that by being a way to locally produce food anywhere and everywhere on the planet.
So at the moment, the whole science is quite, I would say they are quite proprietary, right? Like I've seen there's this Japanese group that is trying to make it more of a citizen science kind of thing. Do you think that all this specialized knowledge, should it be open source and freely available to everyone, or at least some version of it?
Really interesting question there. When we look at the field right now, yes, there's a lot of private research that's happening within these different funded companies in the ecosystem,
mm-hmm,
to help make a future food system. But you're right there. There definitely needs to be more open access and open source research around the agriculture space. And that's why the work that nonprofits around the world are doing is so important. You have groups in the US like New Harvest and the Good Food Institute that are funding research around cell agriculture and making it open source to make sure people all around the world have access to that knowledge and that we can use that knowledge to produce a more sustainable food system all around the world and not just keep that information proprietary to different companies working on the field. This does also help with their idea of more government grants and funding for the ecosystem. If there's more government grants and funding for the ecosystem, it's more likely that they'll have more open access knowledge for the field that can help promote a more sustainable food system and make cell agriculture more accessible to everyone around the world.
So earlier you mentioned that cellular agriculture is not just for food. Maybe we could dive into what are the other non-food applications that we would need cellular agriculture for?
Sure thing. So cellular agriculture, beyond just the food applications of it, has so many more applications. You can look at something like biomaterials, for example. There are companies around the world exploring cell culture technology to produce more sustainable biomaterials around the world, like cell cultured leather, as well as products like cell cultured spider silk. It highlights the idea how cell culture products can be used more than just for food production. could be used the future of manufacturing, for example, which is really exciting. You have companies like Geltor, for example, a cell agriculture company in California that produces collagen directly from cells. And they learned that collagen has more applications than just food production. It's used in leather production, in cosmetics, as well as food and beverage. So initially, Geltor, back in 2018, launched the first applications of the animal-free collagen in the cosmetic industry and have had great results right away. In 2018, they actually received an award for the most innovative product using the animal-free collagen. And that just shows how cell agriculture has so many applications just beyond food production that in the future, I'm sure we'll see more applications of, more companies exploring.
So we're always talking about, you know, in the future, but seems to be a very achievable and attainable step. Like, it's not something that is going to be like 50 years down the road, right? It's going to be more 10 years, do you think?
You're right. Companies are starting to look to launch more food products in the coming years to help make the food system more sustainable. There are still challenges when it comes to scaling production in the ecosystem. And once those challenges are addressed through companies either partnering with established industry players or through partnering with new startups looking to help these startups address those challenges, then we'll start to see more of these products come to market. It's a combination of addressing these scaling factors and hurdles ahead for the field, as well as addressing what we discussed earlier, the regulatory aspects and consumer perception. Once these two issues are addressed, we can see products come to market, I'm sure, pretty soon.
Recently, Starbucks kind of embraced the whole plant-based alternative for their meat, and you know, they embraced Impossible. And I think recently also KFC is also jumping on this whole trend. Do you think that cell-based meat, their so-called golden ticket, or at least the initial decade, they have to come from fast food?
Fascinating question. And I guess there are a few things we could address there. So the goal of cell-based meats in that bigger picture is to become another option we have on our plate. So whether it's plant-based, cell-based, or even conventional, all these different options are going to be important for consumers. And fast food and all those other areas are no different. Impossible and Beyond have done a great job at highlighting applications for alternative proteins in the fast food menu and give consumers another option of what they can choose when going to these restaurants. And they've also highlighted how it's a great market entry point and, along with other food services, are a great way to get in front of consumers. Many cell-based meat companies have actually shared that they plan to initially have limited launches and releases through restaurants. To go to a place like fast food is really interesting to look at as well, because you have so many consumers and customers there. But there are a few challenges that the field will need to address before it gets to the fast food level per se, such as price and scale. If you want to meet the demand that fast food will have for products like cell-based meat, companies have to scale their production to larger levels just to ensure there are going to be no shortages, because that means there's going to be a large demand for such products. Along with that, to get to that, if you're not at that scale, the products may not be affordable and maybe more pricier, and that could limit entry to restaurants like fast food compared to higher end restaurants that scale, and the price point may not be as much of a barrier per se. So it's definitely a really interesting opportunity to get into fast food. It would definitely make the field more accessible and open to more people around the world. So hopefully the field can definitely do that. You mentioned some of these companies like Starbucks earlier. Starbucks and even McDonald's have shared in the past that they plan to use cage-free eggs in the next 5 to 10 years. But let's think about that. What if we can go beyond using a hen or chicken at all and have companies like Clara Foods, which is a company that uses cell agriculture to produce animal-free egg white proteins? What if we have companies like Clara Foods supply them instead with their egg white protein instead of using conventionally raised eggs at all? The possibilities are really endless there if you think about it, and it's really exciting to see what happens next for the field.
Yeah, I mean, with the whole, you know, cell culture, there's a lot of waste reduction already. Like, there's no need to throw away the eggshells. You know, you could pretty much keep like 200 liters worth of eggs in a container rather than having them individually packed from the chicken.
Absolutely. That's another area of cell agriculture. You're only producing and growing the products from the animal that you want. There's less waste produced in that process, like eggshells, for example. by only producing what you want from the animal products or the animal in general, you reduce that waste aspect as well, growing only what you want and using your resources exactly for those purposes.
So like cellular science, right? It produces the parts that you want, okay? But a lot of culture around the world, like the Spanish, where they eat, you know, pretty much the whole pig, same for the Chinese, the Filipinos, and even like parts of America where they eat the bull testicles. Like, do you think cellular production may distance consumers away from their culture, or would it even enhance the culture aspect of eating?
That's a really important question you asked, and I'm glad you mentioned it. You're absolutely right. People around the world have different traditions and cultures when it comes to food. And there's no one-size-fits-all solution here. We need companies and players to emerge all around the world to help address their local food culture and traditions and figure out if this technology is viable to fit into their food customs. There shouldn't be one way of saying this production in this one manner should fit the whole world. No, we need companies all around the world to produce a wide variety of products and showcases to show how this technology can work all around the world. Shiok Meats in Singapore is a great example of that. In March 2019, while other companies were showing showcases of products, of other products, Shiok Meats showcased a cell-based shrimp dumpling. And that's just a great way of highlighting how cell agriculture technologies can be used to create a wide and diverse range of products. Similarly, in, I believe, October 2019, Hong Kong-based Abbott Meats showcased the first cell-based fish maw bites. And again, that highlights this whole idea of cell agriculture. We need more companies coming up around the world to produce products that can help address local cuisine be viable all around the world. So it's a really important topic you brought there.
The science of this cell culture is very complex. And right now, do you think there's enough people thinking about the science, or is there just one small little group, or do you think this should be, like, is it in schools already, this topic?
I wish. We definitely need more scientists, engineers to enter this field.
Yep.
Cell agriculture, if you look at, think about it, the first cell agriculture food companies only emerged in 2014. That's not so long ago in the bigger picture. We definitely need more scientists, more engineers, more people in the whole food technology ecosystem to help make this field viable and a success in the future. I think there's definitely more opportunities for people from all over, no matter what their background is, to get involved in the ecosystem, whether that be on the science side or the engineering side, or the business and marketing side as well. There's so many opportunities for this field to grow, and we definitely need to raise more awareness of the field to younger generations to help them inspire them to get involved, or help them be more aware of their food choices and the impact that they may have in the environment. So there's so many different opportunities there to get involved and also to help further promote the field.
Do you think this whole industry is kind of like the dot-com era, you know, the early internet days, where everything is still wow and kind of unregulated?
An interesting analogy there, Yip. When we look at the cellular agriculture ecosystem, it's different from tech startups you see coming up in the field. There's no need to rush to market and see what the impact is there per se. Companies in this field, they're aware that when it comes to food, regulation, consumer perception is going to be very important. So everyone's working in making sure when they come to market correctly in terms of clearly communicating with the public what the product is, making sure it's safe by working with regulators. It's not necessarily a Wild West perspective, because the field understands the importance of everyone collaborating, communicating clearly, and making sure when we come to market, comes to market correctly for the whole sake of the whole viability of this ecosystem.
Yeah, I think communication will definitely be a big focus. I mean, like, it's such a difficult thing to convey, you know? Like, okay, so now, right now, I'm looking at the photo of you mentioned earlier, the Israel company Elp Farms. Yeah, and I look at the meat, right? It really does look like something that I would cut off from an animal, you know? It doesn't look like it's cultivated from a petri dish. And I noticed that it's very thin. Like, is it difficult to increase the thickness?
Exactly. So right now, companies like Olive Farms and cell-based meat companies all around the world are working on improving the technologies so that they could help make thicker pieces of meat as well. One of these technology aspects is called scaffolding, because it helps provide structural support for the cells to grow into larger, more complex pieces, like a cell-based steak or like a piece of cell-based chicken breast.
So with the scaffolding, is the meat going to fuse up with it, or it just like you know, like you try to build a building, you build a scaffolding, like, or do you build this whole frame and then you just, you know, grow the meat around it? How does it work?
The scaffolding of a building is a great analogy here, and it goes really well with what companies are looking for scaffolding in cellular agriculture. Because there's no precedence right now on what scaffolding could or should look like,
mm-hmm.
companies are exploring different options right now. Could we have an edible scaffolding that the cells grow around and become a part of the final end product? Or should there be a scaffolding that provides structural shape and support that can be removed before being launched? It's a great question that companies are still exploring. I believe both options are being explored right now, but it makes sense to explore an edible scaffolding that can be fused with the end product that helps provide the cells the structural support to grow to the final meat products.
Then I read an ebook. You detail a lot of different aspects of the cell-based industry. Is there, like, if you know of any, is there anyone trying to do bones?
That's a really interesting application, because bones are used in so many food dishes around the world. Yeah, exactly. I'm not aware currently of any startups focusing on bone production, but to make these more complex meat products, you would need bones would need to be a part of it, right?
Like, yeah.
If someone's make a cell-based chicken wing, you need the bone to be there as well.
Yeah.
It's really interesting. I wonder if companies will look into that in the future, or if new companies will emerge trying to address that and be part of a creative meat product.
With the whole diversity of companies out there, I won't be surprised if, you know, they could come up with something of that nature. You know, the chicken wings, the T-bone steak, anything that is kind of really, I won't say easy, but compared to, you know, culturing it, it's relatively easier just to, you know, grow it off the animal. So yeah, it'd be really interesting to see how it unfolds in the next few years when this technology gets more refined, and, you know, when the scaffolding tech, or, you know, just generally just replicating the meat industry by piece by piece. You know, it'd be great to see what's going to happen in the next few years. So maybe, Ahmad, could you share some of the details with the audience about the upcoming conference that you guys will be organizing, and also maybe how to get the tickets?
Sure thing. So excited to share that Cellagri is a co-organizer of an upcoming virtual conference called the Alt Protein Conference. The Alt Protein Conference is a two-day virtual fair taking a look at the companies transforming our food system with both plant-based and cell agriculture alternative proteins. And it's one way to bring the field together in a virtual manner in light of the pandemic. And we're hoping to bring everyone together, from investors, startups, and food companies, to share the latest updates from how these companies are changing our future food system. It's happening next week on September 2nd and September 3rd, and tickets are still available on the website.
Yep, we will provide the links to the Op Protein Conference show if you're interested to take a look. And I think that's about the time that we have for today. Thank you so much, Ahmad, for coming on. I hope everyone has, you know, kind of learned more about what is happening in this whole cell-based science. And definitely, I have learned a lot. And you should definitely also pick up Ahmad's ebook that is available on his website.
Thanks so much for having me here.
Thank you for coming.
If anyone's interested in keeping up with the latest from Cellagri, or keeping up with the latest news and insights from the cell agriculture ecosystem, please feel free to subscribe to the Cellagri newsletter on the Cellagri website. I share the latest insights and updates from the field with our subscribers, and it's a great way to keep up to date with the field.
Excellent. All right. Thank you, Ahmad. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks so much.
Yeah. See you. So yeah, like I said earlier, there is a little announcement to make. So I've made the link to, you know, the Op Protein Conference a little easier. That is bit bit.ly/altproteinconference. So that's bit.ly/altproteinconference, all in one word. And you will be able to access the page and you can sign up and get the tickets if you're interested to take a look. How about the Alt Protein Conference, which is transforming the future of food, and it will have a wide variety of guests, and you know, Ahmad Khan will be speaking as well. So it's a great time to go and learn about the key business opportunities in this space and network with the business and scientific leaders in cellular agriculture and plant-based alternative proteins. So, which I thought, you know, it kind of falls in nicely with the whole theme of the podcast that is, you know, on security, on food security. So if you like to learn more, go to bit.ly/altproteinconference, and hope to see you there. And by the way, this is not sponsored by anyone. It's just that, you know, I thought this would be a nice thing to kind of spread around. If you're interested, go check it out. It'll be on the 2nd of September, so it'll be the next few days away from the day you, if you're listening on the Sundays. If not, yeah, quickly chop your seats, man. So you may guess that probably in the next few more episodes, I will be probably talking more about what happened during this virtual conference and, you know, the talks about all these guys, amazing people. I've actually, among the list of speakers, I've spoken to Ahmad, which is this episode, and then I've also spoken to people in Big Idea Ventures. So the chief investment officer, Tom, will be speaking. So I guess he most likely will be speaking about the whole money aspect of it. And most of these guys that is on it are mostly, you know, scientists and business owners. So yeah, it'll be good to hear their perspective on what's happening. So yeah, I think expect a lot of, you know, amazing content soon regarding my little exploration of this conference. And you know, I really hope that once this COVID thing is kind of over, I will be able to attend a live, you know. I think it would be nice to actually attend this sort of conference, and maybe if they have, do some taste tests. So that is actually my number one motivation in attending these sort of places, because I think the taste testing will be a good indicator on, you know, on what is to come. I mean, a little taste of the future sounds like a great thing, eh? So anyway, so there's you can visit the, you can also, you know, whenever you get a podcast, right, there'll be show notes, and I've already put all the links there, so check it out. Other than that, yeah, thank you for listening to the show. And by the way, if you would like to appear on the podcast but not necessarily wants to be on the full length of the show, what you can do now is actually you go to my page, which is anchor.fm/functionalfoodpodcast, and you'll be able to leave a message. Or, you know, if it's easier for you, you just type functional food podcast, same word, all in one word, functionalfoodpodcast.com, and it will bring you to the page, and you can actually leave a message to me, and I'll be able to feature you on the website. On the podcast. So, you know, it's kind of like the old kind of radio call-in, you know, dial in and speak to the radio kind of thing. Yeah, it's the same idea. So if anything you want to talk about regarding food security, or even regarding your alt protein startup, you know, anything that revolves around food security, like logistics, cold chain, packaging, even retail, warehousing, you know, just basically things that are able to support this space, I would like you to, you know, if you don't want to appear on a full episode, all right, come over, drop a message that is on functionalfoodpodcast.com. Go over there and you'll be able to see this little icon that says message, If you're on a browser, you click on it, and yeah, it will come up with a little screen and ask you, can I have the access to the microphone? You know, and if you're on a laptop, you probably could just talk to it, you know, and drop a message. I think it'd be great. It'd be amazing to be able to hear a voice. Also, the last thing to say maybe is I'm contemplating maybe a midweek, maybe every 2 weeks kind of show, like a quick news update on what's happening. Maybe I'll do that. I don't know. I've just been toying around with this idea, just to have an, you know, sort of a, like a side show that complements this. I'm still thinking what to do, so if you have any idea or you would like to collaborate, you know, hit me up, drop a message on functionalfoodpodcast.com, and let's see how it goes. So see you guys next week, and stay tuned. Bye.